It is August 1st, 2018, and welcome to the Will Chamberlain Podcast. I am Will Chamberlain, your host. This is the very first episode. I usually have not done podcasts in the past. I keep myself on Twitter and Periscope. But I found an app called Anchor, which allows you to record a podcast on your phone very easily. So I'm giving it a shot, and hopefully we'll get this going. If you stay here, if you find me on Twitter, you'll usually see legal, political, and cultural commentary. Today is going to be primarily legal commentary. We're focusing on the Tommy Robinson case. For those of you who are unaware, Tommy Robinson is a prominent critic of Islam in the United Kingdom. And 2 months ago, on May 25th, 2018, he was live streaming outside of a courthouse in Leeds, England. Where he was discussing grooming trials that were underway in the Leeds Crown Court. He was arrested for a breach of the peace. 5 hours later, he found himself in a summary proceeding in front of Judge Jeffrey Marson, where he was charged with contempt of court. He was convicted on the spot, sent to prison, and he spent the last 2 months there, and he was only released today on bail after his appeal of the finding of contempt succeeded and his quote-unquote committal, as it's done in the United Kingdom, was quashed. Now, when I first heard this back in late May, I was shocked, and I think most Americans, especially American lawyers unfamiliar with the British legal system, would also have found themselves shocked. Because in the American legal system, the idea that somebody could be thrown in prison for contempt of court for what is, in fact, reporting on a case, for discussing facts about a case, is shocking. Under our First Amendment, there's no possibility of such a restriction. It's obviously a violation of freedom of the press as a prior restraint on speech. So when I heard about this back in late May, I decided to read about British law to try and figure out what was going on, to understand why, under British law, it was acceptable, it was possible, it was lawful to take this person and summarily whisk him into jail 5 hours after reporting on a criminal trial, and then to keep him there for 11 months. Additionally, something at the time that was also shocking was the fact that a reporting restriction was put in place on Tommy's case. It was a Thursday, I believe. And when they put in place this reporting restriction, it became clear that the few news outlets that had published articles about Robinson's imprisonment, those articles were pulled down immediately. And so that was shocking in and of itself. It was like we were living in an Orwellian, bizarre state. So I did research on British law, and I came to understand where the United Kingdom was coming from, at least, on the question of reporting restrictions on contempt of court. So first, reporting restrictions. In the United Kingdom, there is what I would call a higher priority on ensuring that jurors in any particular trial are not biased or exposed to outside information. The United States worries about this problem too, but we worry about it. We try to solve it in other ways rather than banning reporting on a trial. In the United Kingdom, judges who are worried about potential bias can postpone reporting on trials until the trial is over. They will issue a reporting restriction under Section 4.2 of the Contempt of Court Act 1981 in the United Kingdom. And if they do so, it becomes a crime to publish even true and accurate information about the trial. True and accurate information will land you in contempt of court. So that's the first piece of the puzzle. Why was Tommy able to be thrown in jail? Well, because British law allows for these restrictive prior restraints to be put in place on reporters. And that violating those restrictions is a crime, contempt of court. Second, contempt of court itself, the law in Britain is, for lack of a better word, draconian. In Britain, a judge can throw a contemner, an alleged contemner, into jail for up to 2 years. It's called a committal. He can commit the person to jail. Now, for contempt, you only have to serve half your sentence. Once you've served half your sentence, you can be released. But still, that's a very draconian sentence and something alien to the American system. So that's the background. That's what happened. last, you know, that's what happened on May 25th of this year. Today, on August 1st, the appellate decision came down because Tommy's lawyers appealed in mid-July. And the appellate decision came down today, and the finding of contempt in Leeds Grand Court was quashed, and Tommy was released on bail. And so the question is then, what's going to happen to Tommy? Now, many people on the right, I consider myself a conservative commentator, many people in this space are celebrating, as they should, that Tommy is back home with his three young children. And I think that's extremely gratifying and good news. I am concerned, however, that this is not the end of the road, that Tommy is still in very serious legal jeopardy, and that there's a very good chance that he will find himself back in jail when his case is reheard. So let's talk about why. So, to understand why, we have to actually read the decision that came down from the Court of Appeals. Now, again, to understand, Tommy was sent away for 13 months. That wasn't all based on a single charge. For the charge of setting up a live stream to talk about these grooming trials that were under a reporting restriction, the judge gave him a 10-month sentence. But the judge also activated a 3-month suspended sentence that Tommy had gotten as a result of a case in Canterbury Crown Court where he had filmed inside a courthouse. Now, in America, again, you could probably get away with filming inside a courthouse, just not inside a courtroom. But Britain, again, is stricter with its court system. So he had previously gotten the suspended sentence for 3 months. That was activated by the recent judge. In the appeal, Tommy's team of solicitors and barristers led by Jeremy Dane QC challenged both the finding of contempt in Canterbury from May 2017 and the finding of contempt in Leeds from 2 months ago. They challenged both on the grounds that there were procedural flaws in both contempt hearings that meant that both of those findings should be quashed. The court decided to not listen to the appeal, to deny the appeal of the Canterbury contempt finding, but they did indeed quash the finding of contempt in the Leeds case. And they also quashed all consequential orders, which included the activation of the suspended sentence. So they didn't disturb the fact that there was a suspended sentence, but they quashed the order that said that Robinson must now serve his suspended sentence. So Robinson, who'd been spending 23 hours a day in solitary confinement, was released today on bail. The problem is that their reasoning is not necessarily going to help Tommy in his rehearing. They decided that the finding of contempt needed to be quashed for four basic reasons. First, they decided that the finding of contempt had to be quashed because the summary procedure used was inappropriate. To understand, Britain has a summary procedure for contempt, as does America, but in America, the usage of it is far more limited. The idea is that in order to preserve order in a courtroom, a judge can immediately order the imprisonment of a person who has committed contempt in their presence, right? So, for example, this is called contempt in the face of the court. And so to resolve this, you can use the summary procedure and just send them straight to jail. And you can understand why this might be necessary. Say there is somebody in a jury in a gallery of a trial who continuously shout and won't stop shouting. The ability to immediately order that person to jail is a power that I think most people would agree judges should have. So there's some precedent for the summary procedure being justified in those cases. Here, though, what happened was Tommy live-streamed outside of a courthouse about an ongoing trial. He was arrested for a breach of the peace. They brought him in. They must have realized that he had actually committed contempt of court. And then the decision was made to immediately bring him before the judge and use the summary procedure to find him in contempt. This decision, the Court of Appeal Criminal Division in the United Kingdom found, was wrong. The Court of Appeal found that because Robinson had immediately offered and immediately deleted the live stream of Facebook, that there was no imminent threat to the trial that could be resolved by having a contempt hearing immediately. Because of that, the risk to Robinson's liberty and to, you know, procedural fairness were really high by going so quickly, right? I mean, if you think about it, the conduct occurred in the morning. 5 hours later, he was convicted and sentenced to effectively to 13 months in prison. That's really, really fast. So the Court of Appeals said that's far too fast. Once the immediate threat was gone, everybody should have slowed down, and they should have instead adjourned and come back to it in a week or 2 weeks, perhaps with a different judge. Second, because contempt of court is such a dramatic charge, that because it can immediately lead to a person being thrown in jail, I think it affects the, quote, liberty of the subject, is the language the court used, there's a need for strict compliance with the rules in order to ensure that there's no procedural unfairness. And that's what the court decided there wasn't. First, there was a failure to make a clear statement of exactly what type of contempt that Robinson was being charged with. To understand this, there are three different types of contempt that Robinson probably could have been accused of in this case, is the way to think about it. First is the violation of the reporting restriction that I talked about. Judges can postpone even true and accurate reporting of a case until a trial is over to prevent jurors from being biased from hearing any external information. Second, there's a general rule, not requiring a court order, that says you're not allowed to make prejudicial and false remarks about a case. So if you lie about an ongoing case or you make prejudicial remarks that aren't fair and accurate reporting, that also can be contempt of court and can get you in trouble. Third, could be contempt in the face of the court. Remember that Tommy was outside the courthouse in Leeds when he made these comments. And you might think the face of the court means, well, you must be in the courtroom. Again, that's not true. British law has interpreted contempt in the face of the court to mean behavior that happens even near the courthouse. So it could have been any one of these three things: contempt in the face of the court, prejudicial comments, and a violation of the reporting restriction. Since Robinson was not informed which species of contempt he was being evaluated under, the court thought that was a major procedural flaw. Another major procedural flaw was the failure to identify the exact conduct that Robinson engaged in that the court thought constituted contempt. So basically the way to think about this is what they didn't identify the law, the statute they said he violated, and then they didn't identify what he specifically did that violated that statute. The failure to do so meant that he didn't know what he was actually conceding to. There were many news reports that said Robinson admitted to the contempt. And the reason they say that is because he was given, at the summary proceeding, he was given a doc brief, meaning just a barrister who was there on site, not his normal lawyer. And that barrister said they were only going to argue mitigation, that they weren't even going to contest the finding of contempt. But Tommy didn't know what he was actually admitting to, what he was conceding that he did, what he was pleading to in American parlance. So that was a procedural flaw. And finally, the speed of events meant that the judge couldn't Tommy's barrister couldn't discuss mitigating evidence, that he couldn't provide examples of how Tommy's intent was not to defy a court order, how Tommy would be uniquely harmed by a spell of imprisonment because of his notoriety as a critic of Islam and his three young children, and that these things would weigh against the heavy sentence that was administered in the case, and the opportunity to provide mitigation evidence, and as well as the need to directly specify what species of contempt is at issue and what conduct is at issue. Those are all required by the rules of criminal procedure. They weren't followed. As a result, the Court of Appeal quashed the finding of contempt and set for rehearing. So what does this mean for Tommy? Well, it means he's out. It means he'll be out until at least his next hearing. But what it doesn't mean is that he's off the hook. He's still going to have to show up in court in front of a new judge, and he's still going to be facing a charge of contempt for live streaming about an ongoing criminal trial where there was a reporting restriction on the criminal trial. So for Tommy, this is going to be a challenge because he will have a difficult time explaining that he did not violate the statute. I'm not going to say it's impossible because, one, I'm not an expert in British law as much as it might seem like I'm one. I'm really just playing one on television, or rather this podcast. And So it's not impossible, and I won't put it past them, but it will be challenging because he's on video talking about the reporting restriction. And he's only served 2 months in prison, and he has a lengthy criminal record. So it will be challenging for him to be released. So I think for listeners who are fans of Tommy, it's important to remember that the pressure is going to have to be kept up on the government from below to make people realize that what Tommy did here, even if it is a technical violation of this court order, really is not that damaging or unethical. And in America, it would be profoundly unjust to suggest that doing something like what Tommy did, reporting facts, previously reported facts about a criminal trial, would be a violation. Again, let's think about what Tommy did. Tommy, if you actually ever watched the live stream, Tommy takes out a BBC article where he and starts reading the names and the allegations that had been previously reported against various defendants. They had been reported before the reporting restrictions were put in place. That's the confusing part. You'd be like, why can't he talk about something that's previously reported? Well, if they were published and then the reporting restriction came down, the reporting restriction doesn't require that previous information be deleted. It only requires that no further information be published. So he, by talking about something that was already in the public domain, he was still violating this reporting restriction. But think about it. That's a really draconian thing to do, to punish someone for, right? Like, what damage is it truly doing to discuss information already reported in the BBC and already in the public domain that is limited to the names of defendants and the allegations against them? This is perhaps a technical violation of a court order, but at most a technical one. And yet he was going to be sentenced to 13 months. And yet even the Court of Appeal, in its opinion releasing Tommy, said that it's still a serious contempt, a serious matter. I propose that people in the United Kingdom should be pushing hard against this idea and saying, you're wrong. It's not, actually. This is not some gross injustice that should be rectified with a jail sentence. It's something that should be dealt with a minor fine at most. And the reason being that there's nothing Tommy said had the risk of actually changing jurors' minds, influencing jurors negatively. He was just reading the names of defendants and previous charges. There's almost no possibility of it. Moreover, he didn't intend to bias anyone, because how would one really think that one was biasing a trial by reading out information that's already been publicly reported in the BBC? Why would one think that? It's incredibly counterintuitive. One of the reasons that Tommy's case got such international uproar is because what he did seems so innocent. It's something that happens every day in every other criminal trial that isn't under a reporting restriction. And under every case in the United States, somebody talks about who the defendants are and what the charges are. It's incredibly normal. So pressure should be put on the United Kingdom to realize that its laws are draconian. The orders that judges are allowed to impose on cases in the form of reporting restrictions are odious and repugnant to basic notions of free speech and a free press. The United Kingdom says it has a commitment to open justice. It says it has a commitment to preserving the right of the public and the right of the press to observe what's going on in its courts. But from my viewing, it seems like that value is given short shrift constantly. In America, we really do mean it when we say open justice. Even in very cases where it seems obvious, it would seem obvious to Brits that there should be some sort of reporting restriction in place, there isn't. We use other methods like juror sequestration, aggressive voir dire, and other methods to prevent contamination of jury pools, because we believe that when the First Amendment says you shall not abridge the freedom of speech and the freedom of the press, that means something that needs to be upheld, that isn't just dispensed with because a juror might hear information that a court doesn't think they should hear. So that's where I'm going to stop. We've been going for 20 minutes. I would urge people in the United Kingdom to push hard against the idea that Tommy should have to go without a fair trial instead and be only be judged by a court. and the idea that what Tommy did was so egregious that it could possibly justify a sentence of the nature that was imposed in Leeds and that might yet be imposed again. So hopefully you've enjoyed this, the very first episode of the Will Chamberlain podcast. Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this, follow me on Twitter and Periscope at Will Chamberlain, W-I-L-L-C-H-A-M-B-E-R-L-I-N. Thank you so much. Later.